I've got a quick question for you, alright? I wanna hear your thoughts, I wanna know what's on your mind. I've got a quick question for you, alright? The answer's not important, I'm just glad that we could talk tonight. So what's your favorite?
How did you get?
If there's an answer, they're gonna find it. I think you'll have a great time here.
So, hello again and welcome to another episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel, the podcast where two best friends and comedy writers ask each other questions and give each other answers. I'm one half of that podcast, senior writer for Last Week Tonight, author of How to Fight Presidents, and Bowtie Tire, Daniel O'Brien, joined by my two co-hosts, Record Scratch, Michael Swaim and Abe Epperson. Guys, say hello.
I guess you're wondering how I ended up here. Flashback, me shooting out of my mother like a cannon. Hey, man, thanks for having us. I hope we do Soren proud.
Yeah, well, we need to quickly address what makes this a weird podcast, and it's something that might be top of mind for some listeners. The Writers Guild of America, the union of which Soren and I are both proud members, went on strike recently. We didn't want to. No writer I know wanted to go on strike, but the studios did. They're on the other side of the negotiating table, and they really wanted a strike and to get your favorite shows postponed or canceled. So all of the writing has stopped. All writing on television programs and movies has stopped as long as they're affiliated with our union. And we won't return to work until the studios agree to pay writers what they deserve. This podcast is obviously not scripted. It's very clearly not scripted or written. And we are still allowed to do the podcast. But Soren is so committed to this strike that he hasn't even... spoken.
Right.
He's not even said a word. Like right before the strike, he texted me to say every word he says, every thought he has is technically, legally art, and he won't be sharing it until this strike is resolved. So let's all hope that it gets resolved soon. And in the meantime, no one can replace Soren on this podcast. No one can replace Soren. So I've brought in my two amazing friends, former coworkers. You know them and love them from Cracked. Those Aren't Muskets. Kill Me Now. It's Michael Swaim and Abe Epperson, and they are going to do their best to equal one Soren. I don't know. I don't think it's going to happen, but let's see.
Yeah, especially hard because even though Soren nominally, his mind is completely blank, he is here in the corner looking at us. He's just looking at us. Yeah. I think that makes it a little trickier.
I mean, in a way, though, when I look at him, like sitting in the corner with his face, you know, like just the light hitting it, it says art to me.
Yeah. Oh,
like, and that's a problem.
Yeah.
Right?
Scab.
So where's the solidarity with the studio?
Scab alert,
buddy.
Daniel, am I right? And I assume you're more on top of the details than I. But well, if the strike goes our way, would it not also affect the audience insofar as there will be less incentive to cancel shows like right in the middle of season two to screw everyone out of residuals? Is this addressing that at all?
I believe so, yeah. You said you hoped I'd have more information and be more on top of the details. I truly don't.
Okay.
But the broad strokes are this is supposed to be good for listeners. Whatever you want, the strike will address that and make your life better and make the content
the Candyman can
better. Yeah.
Cool.
It was wild. I was in New York today protesting like you do. And this whole thing has been, to get real for a second, destabilizing and weird and unfortunate, and as inspiring as it is to stand in solidarity with this massive guild that has our support. It's really demoralizing that the studios don't even seem to want to come to the negotiating table because that's how little writers are valued.
Right.
So it's been kind of a bummer, and I was happy to, not happy, but like I felt responsible to go and pick it with other writers in solidarity outside of HBO offices in Manhattan today. And I really went there like with a serious face on and to like be prepared to march on this very important thing. And I was, you guys, it was like a star-studded fucking picket line. It was
so
cool.
Yeah.
I was ready to be like serious, and I was like, all right, what do we want? Oh my God, is that John Leguizamo? Right?
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, and they're all, like, oh, and they're all writers, so the signs are like brutal, just eviscerating. Yeah.
That's one thing I was like, ooh, one of the smartest things they ever
did.
The
blank
with those
signs.
Yeah. Just make them blank. Yeah. It's brilliant.
But yeah, it was a cool time. And again, I tried to be very serious.
Oh, you weren't going
to
drop more?
Like,
there's no more names. It was John Leguizamo was the peak. Okay.
Mandy Patinkin was out with us.
Wow.
It looked like most of the cast of Severance.
What an honor.
Yeah.
They're paused. They just announced. So
Bob Odenkirk, who was like the first person I saw. I was looking for like fucking my buddies from work and Dan Gurwitch. And then I was like, oh my God, it's Bob Odenkirk.
Yeah.
What's he doing here?
I just heard he's going to be in season 2 of The Bear. Very excited about that.
Yeah. Did you like that? The first season?
Oh yeah. Definitely a standout show for me of the
it
last couple of years.
Very good at anxiety.
I don't know if
I was anxious the whole time.
And I love cooking shows and reality shows. It's like a natural evolution of things I watch already.
I don't know if you guys listen to this podcast. I don't, and I don't recommend it. Our listeners will know how refreshing it is for me to have someone on the other side of this podcast who has seen something that's come out recently, because Soren watches almost nothing.
Baby stuff
all the time. And
always has, always will.
Yes.
Always will. The vacant old Soren.
Yeah. Every once in a while, he'll be on a flight and he'll have no choice but to watch a movie, and he gets very excited to talk about it. But it's still, he'll be like, hey, I just got back from Arizona. Have you seen Gremlins 2? It's like, yeah, man, I'm not ready to talk about it now.
Yeah. That's so funny.
Every dad I know, and I am worried that this will be my fate, all the fuck they talk about is Bluey. Do you know this Bluey character?
He has tried to, I haven't watched it yet, but he has recommended it to me on this show. And I just like, I couldn't be fucked. I haven't had a reason to find it and put it on. But as soon as that episode came out where he recommended it to me, my brother David, himself a father of two, texted me and was like, Soren's right, Bluey fucking rules. It's like, what is going on?
Every dad I know is like, man, I have to watch all this baby crap. It's rough, man. It's mind numbing. Bluey is pretty good.
Yeah.
It's like the brain slug from Futurama, you know, or just everyone goes there, comes back, and they're like, Bluey
is good.
Yeah. I'm hoping that I will put it on and there's some like kind of like it somehow is like drugs or something. Like I watch it and then like heroin shoots into me. And I'm like, oh, I get it. Yeah. Oh, that's fun. Oh. That's why.
You just say, that's why they call it Bluey. Yeah.
I mean, if the writer's strike goes on long enough, they might whip that out.
Yeah.
You know they're eyeing ChatGPT like, it's ready for prime time. Yeah. You're like, no, it's not, man. It's really not yet.
But speaking of movies and writing dads, do you guys have any information you want to share about what you guys are working on before we get into this show?
Ooh,
Abers,
you're so good. Yeah. So, hi, we're Abe and Michael. And so basically, yeah, we're making an independent film. It's based on the time that Michael's father came out as a gay furry while he was a teenager, and a furry, someone who enjoys anthropomorphized version of animals as in art forms, in
Zootopia, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, so on.
Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, semi-autobiographical. It's a coming of age, like sex comedy / drama. So if you've heard of our stuff that Daniel so gracefully mentioned at the top of this cast, you might be interested in the fact that we're producing a feature and you can help. So basically we're just trying to get the word out. The name of the movie is Papa Bear. Uh-huh. And we're trying to get this link out, which should be in the description that you can click on. But if you want to type it in right now because you're so excited, that's seedandspark.com/fund/papa-bear. And you can like become a part of the movie, get stuff from the movie, watch the film early, even go to a premiere. We'll fly you out. So visit the page and, you know, I don't know, help us out. We want to make this movie really bad. It's the only thing we really want to do in life ever. Yeah. And we really hope you agree that it's like a story worth telling.
It's funny. It's poignant. It's, I think, timely and hopes to explode a lot of myths about furry fandom because it hasn't really been portrayed charitably in the media or the news. While still being much broader than that, right? It's not for furs only. It's like a fun coming. We compare it to like eighth grade, Lady Bird, stuff like that. Book Smart. These are vibes we're trying to aim for. And basically on a personal note, like since Kill Me Now, which was super fun, we've been trying to sell screenplays for like 8-9 years. And we're like, itching to just spend time on this earth making a film together more so than like trying to navigate the system anymore. And we've had a lot of success. We're super lucky. We already have investors lined up on the back end, but like the crowdfunding piece is also going to help us, right? Stretch to fill the gap. But we're ready to make like a scrappy independent movie. And I'm really proud of the script. You can check out the script, the business plan, the lookbook, like it's fully transparent over there. Yeah, seedandspark.com/fun/papa-bear. Yeah, we're done.
I mean, the movie has a lot working in its favor, in my opinion. And for listeners, I think our listeners are almost exclusively people from the crack.com days. It's them, my family, and my ex-girlfriend, and that's it. We have not picked up any new listeners. No one is interested in this podcast. But if you are fans of this show, which means you're fans of Cracked, Michael and Abe are underselling themselves a bit. They are wholly responsible for the basic vocabulary of sketch comedy that came from crack.com. They invented it themselves as far as what our sketches and shows were going to look like and feel like and sound like. I learned everything I know about sketch writing from working with these two because I was very lucky to be there at the same time. So if you like all of the visual output that was put out through Cracked, you're going to like these guys as a writing and directing duo, as a pair of people who are making movies. And you have a rare opportunity to help them make a movie and put it out into the world. That's one great thing this movie has going for it. Another is just like a very personal, real story that like, since I found out about this, I don't think it's weird to say Michael's unique life. I was like biting my tongue for years, being like, make that fucking, what are you doing? Make that movie. You're the only one in my life who has this story. Why? You got to tell this story because like a lot of people, my only exposure to furries has been like thrown off punchlines in sitcoms and a real sex episode I watched when I was 13 years old that was essentially just like, hey, look at this parade of freaks, let's all laugh at them. I'm like, ah, ha, ha, all right, that's good. There hasn't been like anything humanizing, you know, these human beings until Michael and Abe.
That's right.
Thanks for the kind words, Daniel.
That means of obviously so much coming from someone of your caliber. I was just rewatching, just to put some shine on Abe too specifically, who is the whole visual technical side of everything that we did and are going to do with this film. I was just watching If the Internet Was a High School Again. Man, beautiful. What a clean, nice production. Soaring as Facebook, I believe. Something like that. Lots of fun, was, man.
Yeah. That was so, some a little bit behind the scenes on that is it was done as a one-er, which is industry shorthand for all one take, no cuts. You can watch that back and realize like, oh, it's all happening in real time. It's a massive cast and
huge
travels to a couple of different locations within this school with no cuts at all. It's really fun and an ambitious thing to do. And we had to do so many takes because Soren kept fucking up.
It's he kept fucking
one of my favorite things like because at the
he never fucks up.
Yeah. Point of the sketch. Yeah, imagine the feeling yeah. of you miss your line 2/3 of the way through like a 7-minute sketch that's a oneer.
Right, because it's all choreographed. We all have very specific places we're supposed to be. And you can watch that sketch back. There's like, with the exception of Michael and maybe the actress who plays Google, most people have like one or two lines and then they're out. You get in with like, I'm Reddit, I'm doing a joke right. in the voice of Reddit. Okay, now I'm gone. Now this person's doing a joke in the voice of Instagram. We all have one or two lines, easy to memorize generally, and Soren is a good memorizer and he still fucks up his one line over and over again. And like, he was not having a good time on the day. He was really disappointed in himself.
Hard
he was
on himself, kicking himself yeah. for it. Yeah, he was absolutely like, why is this happening? He got the yips,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
I always like the interpretation that he did it as a power move because I did something, he insulted me somehow.
Yeah. It's very funny to look back and laugh on it now because it's so out of character for him to be the reason that things don't work on set one day.
Oh, yeah.
But it was really like right. getting into a couple hours on that. It was like, maybe we don't do a one-er. I don't know. Maybe we cut Soren. Are we allowed to do that? He works with us.
He's a dear friend. But I think that's a cut.
Yeah, especially because the other thing that you guys were famous for was After Hours, which is memorizing, I don't know,
yeah,
several monologues.
Huge correct. Blocks, yeah. Like, I think After Hours had a very special feel. It feels like a simple show to the point that people have, you know, asked here and there or assume that we're improvising it, that it is just we're that insightful and it's an uncut 5.5-minute conversation that we had. Wild. But I think most people pick up on that it's obviously highly scripted, but I think if you're not an actor you might not realize that almost no show has these dense technical monologues. That was like unique to After Hours and a few, like, there's not a lot of shows that throw that much at, like, I'm doing a book report right now really cool, really, really quickly. And that shit's hard to do.
Very funny. Dude. Anytime someone has been like, I loved After Hours, it's just like the conversations me and my friends have. Like, really? Your friend talks for 6 uninterrupted minutes?
In like Back to the Future format? Yeah.
Because I don't know exactly how your guys' memorization brain works, and I know everyone's slightly different, and I've only had to do it a few times, but like, I would always look at someone says something else, literally anything else. Like, even if it's just like, yeah, that's right, Abe, you know, or something like that. That is like my oasis because that means that I got through a section all in one. So now I can memorize a new section.
Yeah.
And it's like when you don't have any of those, there's no stops. There's no, you just have to get out 2 paragraphs. That is just daunting because your brain has to do the performance aspect in the real moment, but also hold in your brain 80 things and then someone says one thing and then you have to remember 80 other things.
And once in a while, it would be the third episode and it would be like, we got to do this because dawn is coming. So your brain's not working great.
You're doing an all-nighter. It's one of the worst things we ever did.
But I was very much looking forward to doing it for Papa Bear.
It was always very funny with an after-hour script because Michael, I'm sure you as well, when I'm writing it, I was just like, this character talks, this person needs to have this argument, and this argument goes for as long as it needs to go, and I wasn't really thinking about the logistics of it while I was writing it, and then there would be times when I would realize I gave Soren a 3.5-page monologue, and I'd just be like, hey man, I'm sorry, I'm really sorry, I know you don't like Star Wars, but this version of you do, you love it a lot. And you have to talk about it at length. And all the names are weird. I'm really sorry, man. And it just so happens that in this episode, I wrote that my character eats a lot and doesn't speak very much. Yeah, my bad. I'm sorry.
Gets like a mud pie. Yeah, we would try to start breaking it up with like snipers. So there's usually room for three arguments, and whoever's the fourth is just sniping with punchlines. So you try to be charitable and like punch one in the middle, so it has to cut to the opposite side of the table and then back.
Yeah.
And you can get away with that sometimes. Man, remember when Justin Vachon, right? Was this the original?
Vire.
Yeah. The very
first
director. But you
know what? He should. I mean, Vachon is good.
That's pretty amazing.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's
true. He should do that. He should consider that.
He wanted to include, and I think we did include a couple like trick shots and like Breaking Bad style shots where the camera's like connected to stuff.
Yeah.
God bless you, Justin. Like, I wish that would have worked out. But we did at Craig get to do a whole range of scrappy, low-budget guerrilla filmmaking, but all the way to some pretty high-budget effects-driven stuff.
Yeah.
And I feel like, so there's this Malcolm Gladwell book, the one about, you know, doing 10,000 hours or being in a particularly like good time and place to hone your skills. And I do feel like Sketch is such a good place, especially a Cranked where the content mill was like cranking fairly aggressively all the time, to hone every genre. And Abe has like nailed every genre and learned how they all work, which is really cool. A cool aspect that I think is going to give us a lot of leeway. We're doing some experimental stuff in the film. Like, it wouldn't be, I don't think, a furry movie without animated sequences to represent like the artistic part of the community. So, anyway, I navigated it smoothly back to the blood.
I'm curious.
Let's suck each other's dick a little bit.
I have some quick questions for
you
guys.
Are we doing QQs?
It's
about that time.
I'm actually, we had our old coworker and friend Jason Pargin on a little while ago, and I was asking him about his writing process because I find myself like completely obsessed and fascinated with the physical act of writing that people get into. And I'm extra curious what it's like with the two of you, because you are a pair, you're a creative duo. And what space are you in when you're breaking a story, and what space are you in when you're like physically writing it? We've heard those stories about the Coen brothers where they're like locked in a room somewhere, taking turns at a typewriter or a computer, and like talking each other through line by line what's happening. So I having never been in a duo, I'm very curious how you guys operate.
I'm not even kidding. And I think it's because they're our favorites. It's exactly that.
Really?
I think we did it on purpose. I think we were like, that sounds good.
Well, because we did talk about, because I like co-writing scripts lately. It's a lot of fun, you know, with all the various crack folks, because it's like combining two random instruments and you always get something that's slightly new. And when I write with Ganser, for example, we get an outline, rip it apart, trade it back and forth, divvy up sections, write them, workshop them. And Abe and I very consciously, actually, because we've collaborated for so long, we've done it a few different ways. But the most common nowadays that we settled into, and sometimes I hate it because it's very slow going. It's a slow process, but we go,
right.
But you want to do it right. And we're both micromanaging. So we're like, we'll just do it together on the phone, together, line by line, and take turns, whoever's typey type. But it is, and it's so slow compared to writing by yourself. Yeah. But I think you get great, you know, results either way. But we will be like, okay. So Hank said that. So what would Trey say?
What's that line? Agonize over that. And then sometimes we'll be like, you know what? We're not solving it. And this is slow going. Let's move to a different
section. Well, it often turns into long philosophical tangents because you're like, okay, so what does the scene mean? Well, people are basically this. Oh, you think people are basically that? Is that the core of the message of what we're talking about with the scene? And in fact, if you're a Small Beans patron, which I would say right now, throw your money at the Papa Bear campaign. But eventually, we actually recorded ourselves writing the whole script. So there's a 55-hour series called Movie Production Diaries where you can hear us in real time writing the script. It's painfully slow.
Man.
Right. But people say that they listen to it and like they fall asleep to it because we force ourselves to be calmer than we really are. Mm-hmm. Because as you can tell, the alarming amount of patience that you have to have. Like, I'm sure any solo writer is listening to this and is like, that sounds exhausting and a terrible way of doing things and a horrible waste of time. Very true, but it's kind of how you get two minds to see as one, and there is no replication for it. It's just in the trenches working with each other until your ideas and his ideas are the same.
Yeah.
And the reason Abe and I have been, I mean, besides from like the human shared core value aspects of friendship, like our, I think our creative bond is we think very similarly and have similar values and messages that we want to put out into the world, but also our slight discrepancies in terms of skills or whatever are perfectly complementary. So like we both can write dialogue, but I have a special facility for it, I think Abe would agree. And because I'm about to compliment him right back, which is like, but then when we're in the early stages where we're breaking the story, we're basically just both pacing around on the phone. And Abe definitely takes the lead with, he just has structure so under his belt that Abe will take the lead with, this should happen next, or like, this is the proper time for this to begin happening. And so Abe will sort of take the lead in that part, and I'll take the lead on the finite dialogue. And then on set, similarly, because I have like a theater background and love working with actors, I'll take the slight lead, like we both do both, but I'll take the lead working with actors. And I will say the one glaring blind spot is I can't work a camera for shit or choose shots for shit. So Abe will take full lead on and ownership of like directing the film.
And Daniel, never underestimate the power of a cocaine enema, you know?
I remember Abe's structural insights being very valuable at Crack, because Michael, when we were writing together on Agents of Crack, and like I hadn't done much like episodic writing of any kind. I like you come from a theater background, and like you, I also really like dialogue and playing with that. And it was really Abe who could boil things down very simply for us, where it was like season one, enemies become frenemies. Season two, frenemies become friends. Season three, frenemies become lovers. And I was like, oh yeah, I never would have thought like if I was left to my own devices, it would just be two people sitting across from each other saying funny things until the lights went out.
That's the other thing a good filmmaker will do is remind you it's not a comic strip. Like, all you've written here is two heads talking and saying very good things, but maybe they could move around. Maybe something they say could be a visual thing instead of things they say. And you're like, that's very smart.
You just blown smoke up my ass. You guys are both insanely talented, and you know it.
Well, the thing, I'm just trying to get you some more investors for your movie, because you did.
That's true.
You have some investors lined up, but they are Ghislaine Maxwell, Roman Polanski, I just feel like we need to like crowd them out.
Not, God damn it, dude.
Look, we misread the website. It turns out it said monsters. Monsters was the word that we misread.
Current day Kanye is in, but classic Kanye is out. We've got all the
they
wrong people.
It's very specifically, he was like, I am coming to you as an investor now.
With my black nylon stocking mask on. That's the version.
Right after I said the Hitler shit.
Yeah. I will say that's been new, because like our first movie, there was one investor, i.e., very interesting, like this slick British executive dude just had the money and gave it to us, and we made a movie.
Yeah,
but this time we're even doing the investment raising ourselves, and very, very humbled to just ask the world for money to make a movie and have some people from all over the world call us and write us checks for like tens of thousands of dollars. Pretty trippy. Yeah,
it's wild to ask the world.
Still not
usually
enough.
Yeah. Gives you
we need more though.
Yeah.
And to have it return kind of on that investment it's wild. It disrupts everything I know about the universe. Yeah. Daniel.
I really like that you guys are, I'm sure it's tough soliciting investors and crowdfunding, but I really, I it feels like a criminal act of unfairness that you guys haven't been making movies regularly since Kill Me Now. Kill Me Now, I think we all kind of thought, like, this is it. They're going to make this. It's going to be great because it's them. And then none of us understood how Hollywood worked at the time, and I still don't. But it was like, once you make a movie, then they will let you make more movies.
If right? it's good.
If it's
and
good.
And it's objective. Yeah, yeah. Which it is mm-hmm. not. Yeah. Very kind. And But I will say, it failed to find like massive distribution, I think is what Daniel's alluding to there, which is a whole second challenge. And yeah, that was really a shift for us, I think, where we realized we can't just play the politics game or like the hustle game. We're just going to try to make a movie because the way we've always done it is just...
young and naive back then.
In Kill Me Nowadays? Yeah.
Yeah, we were.
That was a lot of fun. You guys let me be in your movie. I got to fly out to Illinois with you guys and
yeah, super
and, like,
fun.
You flew out to
hang
Illinois
out for a little bit. It was
yeah, and got to do scenes with Kyle Mooney and Beck Bennett, who obviously are like highly notable now. And I have said this before, but I'll say it again because it's short and sweet. Beck did a scene where he had not slept for like 48 hours because he had to do other scenes because it's a production like that. And he was sitting in the front seat of like a Corvette while I argue with him. And he fell asleep between every take, but as soon as someone said action, he would just spring awake and start acting like really well.
Yeah.
And when we finished, he's like, okay, I have to go directly to the airport and go home now or I'll miss my flight because it was that kind of production. And I was like, you're going to be famous soon. And yeah, I was absolutely right.
This is some more smoke blowing because I really remember, I mean, Beck is like a world-class talent. Everyone has seen him on SNL or listens to him. He's Launchpad on DuckTales. It's fucking great. He's killing it, and it's wonderful. And he's a sweetie. He, to continue blowing smoke up your guys' asses, he like fought for that part in the movie. He lobbied for it because I was at the initial table read with you guys where he was not cast as that part. He was one of the like assistant frat bros, and then when the person who got the part that when the main person dropped out before filming started, he like petitioned you guys. He really pushed for that part in a way that showed how much respect he had for the writing that you guys done.
I'll say something that I like a memory I'll always treasure was
like, no one was doing that movie for money. This is a good part. I want to do this part. I think I can do this part really well. Please give it to me.
And very honored. Like Brad Fancy, who played the killer, still writes me to this day to say like, what's cooking? You're one of my favorite writers. Like it was very inspiring that they did it because they thought it was funny and good. Like that's the best reason. Right. And, one memory that I'll always treasure was, I just remembered Bruna, our objectively racist hairdresser, but that's
Bruna.
Not what I want to talk about right now.
Yeah, I did not like her.
She was borderline Nazi lady. Anyway, but I went upstairs because it's a horror movie. We're shooting in a cabin, and Kyle, who we fell in love with online because he does this amazing man on the street, weird improv stuff, where he's just fully like courageous comedian, so organic that you know it's improv and you assume, man, this dude must not prepare at all. He must just be like a natural talent. And something interesting about his character, I'll spoil the movie because it's a decade old now, is he did
Wait,
it all
no,
along.
It can't be a decade old. I'm 17. What do
That's
you mean?
Right. he done it. He's the bad guy. And the scene where he reveals that, he's not funny, right? It's like a brief moment of real horror or seriousness. And I saw him like go off to be alone and drill that scene every day of the shoot for hours. And I was like, that's so cool.
I
respect.
Respect.
One more quick set story about Bruna. And then I swear to God, we'll get into the show. We're still in the intro. I didn't care for Bruna. I was on set with you guys for 2 or 3 days. I can't remember. And one of those days I bought a bunch of food to grill for the cast and crew as a 3 a.m. lunch or whatever we were going to do. I just got a bunch of sausages and burgers and it was going to like cook for you guys. And I started grilling at some point because like the set was an active like house. Like it was a cabin in the woods. So they had grills and barbecues and I was grilling and like the, I don't know if any of our listeners has ever had to cook for like 100 fucking people. And a lot of them crew members who have been carrying stuff and holding mics and lights and lugging equipment all day. It's like a bunch. It's a high stress situation where a lot of very sweaty, very hungry, angry, aggressive people are about to descend on you. And I'm grilling as fast as I can. Like food takes as long as food takes. And fucking Bruna, who didn't do shit for me, was just standing and like watching me cook and shaking her head at how long sausages physically take to cook. She was like shaking her head like,
this it's like, is it's
not,
on the grill.
This is not fast enough. This is not, I'm gonna do what I think her voice was, but it's I'm wrong. This is not fast enough. You need to go faster. And I was
ready,
like,
ready,
hey, this is you're not being very helpful right now. This should have been done already. This should have been cooked already for them. And I had to like, the lead in your movie was Caitlin Large, who is my childhood best friend that I've known for 30 years or so. And I had an entire telepathic conversation with her while I'm covered in sweat and Bruna is telling me that I need to cook faster. I just look at Caitlin and I stare at her for 10 seconds.
And she's like, oh, I know.
Bruna, come with me. And she's like, nice. I had to like take her away from the situation. I was like,
Bruna, come here.
Yeah, like Caitlin, you need to get rid of this woman or we're going to make the news. I don't know. I'm surrounded by fire and I'm mad at this woman. And no one knows that I'm here in Illinois. So anything could happen. Please remove her.
In the woods. Yeah.
People go wild when they're sleep deprived. Yeah. Nick Mundy had some surly words with Jacob Reed on that set as well.
Really? It takes a lot to get to make Nick Mundy ornery.
Mundy, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's that Jacob was legitimately sick, like with the flu.
Mm-hmm.
But Mundy was, you know how Mundy is. Like, it was about how Mundy was so helpful.
Yeah.
And he felt like the spirit of the shoot was such that everyone should rise to that standard. He was shooting.
You should be proud that you have the flu.
That's right. Mundy was shooting scenes where between takes he would throw up and then come back and go, "No, I'm good. Let's do it, man. Let's go. We'll get it again."
Yeah,
and Jacob was like, "No, I'm sick. I'm gonna not shoot today." And Mundy was like, it's like we're a high school football team. We're all like, and he was like, "You're not? That's fucked up, man."
Yeah.
I remember because I was so separated from like the cast really during that production because I didn't direct. That was our friend Travis Long, but I was director of photography, so I was on set every moment. So people have times to go away and do something. And I remember Beck Bennett and I, whenever I saw Beck, I would be like, what's the hot goss? Like, what's going on in the actor's world? And he would do like point by point, like as if it was like a PowerPoint presentation.
And we were
like,
all young, single people. There was juicy shit happening, I will say.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, living vicariously through. It was like a whole thing. It was also a special time.
Abe, is it fair to say, did you not sleep during that movie?
It was tough. I slept on a couch.
I felt like you were on set always because you were DP, so you're always filming and you're conceptualizing shots. And then I felt like the time that I was there, when set was wrapped, you were watching dailies with Travis in a hotel somewhere a house somewhere, constantly watching things. And then
like mid morning, we'd sleep fitfully four or five hours and then start again.
But
can't wait to do it again. Something I don't know if people know, but shoots are almost always 12 hours unless there's famous people or babies involved, because you can't force either of them to do that. But when you're like mid or low budget, it's always 12 hours because that saves you thousands of dollars, like you'd cost yourself by not doing it that way. So it's a grueling lifestyle when you're on set, at least. And you'd be surprised how taxing both acting are and waiting around to act is. It's tiring.
I actually feel like there's that X-Men. I don't know much about X-Men, but the Juggernaut, right? Isn't his power that you just like keep getting momentum?
Yeah,
he's unstoppable.
I feel
momentum.
Nothing can stop him.
I much prefer the thing that I do on sets, which is almost typically you turn on and you slowly churn and churn until your maximum velocity, and then you just maintain that until you fall apart.
Yeah,
I'd rather do that instead of what you guys do as actors, which would be to, all right, do that and then stop for an hour and then do it again and then stop for an hour. That sounds
bring your energy up, bring your energy down over and over and over. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's tough.
But Abe, you're a great actor too.
I don't know.
Check out the classic sketch sleeves if you want proof of that.
In anticipation of this podcast, and also just for nostalgia's sake, I rewatched a couple of Agents of Cracked episodes because that remains like
such a
fun and silly time in our lives. And I'm so glad that we got to do
this.
It
was
together.
Our body switching episode.
Yeah. But I watched the dinner party episode, which I think ended season two, and compulsively scrolled the comments as one does. And there's so much love for Abe's crazy Raul and a look you give to the camera at one point that is like genuinely unsettling and terrifying.
Yeah, what I was going for. Yeah. That was fun. I shouldn't have done that.
By dinner party, do you mean the one where I make you eat dinner at my house?
Yeah.
The same one where I send you a text with like a toy car?
Yes. Yeah, that one.
Okay. Abe does a little hand wave move that cracks me up every time. Like to answer a question about where someone is, he just like does a sine wave in the air with his hand.
Up and down.
The thing that I find so special about Agents of Cracked is even though we did have some structural ideas in place, it was very clear that we were making this show while we were so young, before we knew how hard it was to make shows. We were so stupid that we were just like, let's just do it. Let's just see if we can do it. Let's just have the characters hang out and do this thing. And like stuff that I don't think I would have written years later when I would be thinking about like the logistics of how to film something. At the time we were too dumb to know what we were doing was hard. And for that reason, we were just more fearless and it felt easier to us.
Yeah, and case in point, there are still people doing it, but that entire trend sort of died down and the new trend that's good, I love it, I watch a lot of it, is just long, long essays with someone either just sitting there saying it, or a couple simple shots, or even just voiceover and footage. You know why? Because it's infinitely easier, and it can still get millions of views. Like, you don't have to do what we did. But gosh, I wouldn't have it any other way. Well, I mean, we want to make movies, so making short movies was what we wanted to do anyway. But this new form of, I watch these, I mean, and we made our fair share as it started to ramp up, but just explainer vids, essentially. Yeah. Like Maggie Mae Fish does great ones. And I'm like, we should have done just those. That's easy.
Yeah.
Abe probably doesn't agree.
No, I
hate it.
Our coworker, Jason, was very gently trying to nudge me in a direction where I was running video at Cracked, where it was like, hey, look, this is Jenny Nicholson. She is filming explainer videos on her iPhone, and she's got 12 million views.
Right.
Are you sure you want to spend $30,000 making another season of Rom.com? I was like, yeah, I do. Because
it's awesome, dude.
It's fun.
Because it's funny in the way that I like.
Yeah.
Okay? Just leave us alone.
I like internet content. I like them all.
I was talking to, you remember Michael Cox? People don't
Cox
necessarily.
Machine. Yeah.
He was kind of coming up through USC. He was like we were like partners, basically. We were cinematographers. And all that stuff. And we worked with each other so much that I usually brought him on as DP or as a gaffer on our stuff. And I remember, and there was a moment near the end of Cracked where it was just like talking head shows or news where he turned to me and he was like, this place was really special, wasn't it? and it absolutely like broke me. I was like, oh man, yeah. Like there's so much history here, and the beauty, like that sentiment is so beautiful. And at the same time, he's absolutely right.
Yeah. That is very sweet and wonderful. And yes, if I had heard that at the time, I'd be like, what the fuck do you mean was? It's still great. What are you talking about? I'm very happy.
Everything's fine. Those
few years, there was like 5 or 6 years there at least.
We were really lucky. We
were so lucky and making, frankly, some of the best stuff. You know, we felt bigger than the world. It was amazing.
Oh, it's been downhill since then for me, for sure. I'm still trying to chase that high. And HBO's not doing it.
Yeah, you
new
want
HBO,
you need those,
baby.
You want those sweet, sweet streamies. You want that Paul Scheer buzz.
Let's get into the show. Speaking of movies, hey guys, God. I got a quick question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
are there any movies from your past that you love and you haven't like disavowed, but you're still kind of embarrassed of them? Like I can get us started, because it's a really specific needle that I'm asking us to thread, because there are some movies that were foundational for me that I loved, like Garden State. We talked about it on your show.
Right.
I loved Garden State so much when it came out. It's not a movie that today I stand by and will insist people need to see. And meanwhile, there are some movies from my childhood, like Jurassic Park or Ferris Bueller's Day Off, where I'm like, yes, you have to see this movie. I love it, and I'm right for loving it. And there are other movies, the specific kind of movie that I'm talking about now, like the movie Euro Trip, that I loved, but I understand it's probably bad. I don't care.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I love it. I'm not going to fight about it, though.
But, like, you wouldn't even proudly recommend it, right?
No, yeah. No, absolutely not.
There's a little bit of guilt in it, but that's not stopping you from loving the shit out of it.
But you feel if you shared it, they would then think you have bad taste. This kind of lame. Yeah.
But it's the kind of thing where if we were at a dinner party, and I mentioned Euro Trip, and I was like, I don't really care about it. It's dumb. It's not good. And then someone at the party was like, yeah, it's bad. Like, well, you know, it's sort of a character actor's paradise. It's like I would fight for it if I was challenged on it, I think.
Yeah.
Fred Armisen, are you going to tell me Fred Armisen's wrong? You're going to tell me Thomas Lennon is wrong?
Who the fuck are you? Who are you?
Have you guys, before we go any further, have you guys seen Euro Trip?
No.
I've seen Euro Trip, absolutely. And I kind of agree with you in terms of that, you know, like that canon, I guess, of trashy movies. It's one of the top tiers. It's still trash, and you're trash for liking it.
No, I know.
I love you and support you.
It came out at a time where there was like too many early 2000s raunchy sex teen comedies. The American Pie had set off a crazy domino effect where they were just like, let's make Road Trip, let's make this, let's make that, let's make Euro Trip, let's make so many movies that are trying to capitalize on this raunchy teen movie fest. And Michael, I'm so glad you haven't seen it. Because like the premise of this movie is that, so very quickly, there's this guy, Scotty. He's 40, but he's playing 17. He just graduates high school. He is dating a gal named Fiona, and he is an email pen pal with someone from Germany that he believes is named Mike. And he has been emailing Mike, telling Mike all about his life and all of his fears, all of his concerns. And he's got such a great connection with Mike. And then right after graduation, Fiona dumps Scotty. She's been cheating on him. So they break up and Scotty's upset and he's talking to his pen pal, his German pen pal Mike about it. And then Mike makes romantic overtures to Scotty. And Scotty's like, I don't want to fucking date a man. It's the early 2000s. What are you talking about? And he sends a devastating message to Mike that is like, sever all contact. Leave me alone. Get me out of your head. And then he learns that the person he thought was Mike this whole time, because it's German, it's Micah. And it's a girl. And actually, it's a hot girl.
Oh, whoa.
And Michael that's enough to justify this movie's existence. Like, that's that's the plot. He's like, I thought it was Mike, and that's gross, but it's Micah, and it's hot.
And we're
going,
dude.
Let's go to Europe, track her down so I can fuck her in the Vatican, I think is what ends up happening.
I think that's right. I think they do. Yeah, they're in the Vatican. You know this movie well, I as do. You should.
Lady from Buffy shoved a flute up her vagina and it launched a whole subgenre of film.
Really,
that's all
did.
I know. I haven't
that
seen any
really
of them.
Did.
I haven't seen American Pie either.
Really? Oh, because there was a different lady from Buffy in Eurotrip.
That's right.
Michelle
You're
Trachtenberg. Harriet the Spy.
And Michelle Trachtenberg. Wow, that's smart. Way to catch that. I do have an answer for you, but it's not exactly, because I really did think about this a lot. And
you have already put more effort into the show than Soren and I.
But it's a great question, and you're right. Like, I could tell that as soon as I started thinking about it, I was like, I don't really have like a guilty pleasure about this, but I do think there's a slightly different thing that is kind of in the same vein that you're talking about, which is there are movies that you sometimes have such a deference for still to this day. And you want to like shout it from a mountaintop and say, everybody, you should think it's more important than it is. Even if they're like, yeah, I see how this is good. Yeah. But I'm like, but do you? I have that movie. So it's more of like how I watch it, which is a sobbing mess. And that movie for me is October Sky.
I knew it.
Yeah. I can't watch October Sky with people because it's like Pavlovian at this point. I will start crying. I will just start crying.
Is
and
that
so, movie.
Two things. Yeah. I've never seen that movie. Two, the fact that you're crying, and I know you pretty well, I want to take a guess. Is it about fathers and sons?
Yes.
It's about a father who disapproves of the job his son wants to do. He wants him to do the job
and
he
that
does.
That father is Chris Cooper. And that son is Jake Gyllenhaal.
And is his name Homer in it?
Homer Hickam. If you had one thing to guess, Dan, what their fundamental disagreement and estrangement is about.
Yeah.
Knowing who I am.
And the title
and the
October Sky.
Like,
right.
What do you think it might be? Do you have a guess?
This is going to sound insane. Space?
It's rockets, baby.
The dad is a coal miner underground. The son
wants
to go to the opposite place of that.
He wants to go to the opposite place,
God almighty.
Man.
God almighty. Writing is so stupid. It's so funny.
But I love that, like, hey, you go down in the ground, you're in a void of blackness with little sparkles
dad.
Around you. You go up in the sky, same shit, dad.
I want to go up. To space,
not
yo,
down.
You gotta
to
go
ground.
Down to the ground, son. That's exactly it. It's a metaphor. I love it so much.
But your grandfather played left field, and I played left field. You want to play right field? That's the opposite.
And man, oh man, there's so many lines that make me go, like the father and son stuff. Like, I feel seen right now. You totally nailed it because that stuff gets me. I know it gets Mike sometimes too. But the other thing about this movie is it's thoroughly mid. Like, the most of the scene work is just about, 1950s, better times.
Disney family movie. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just like, oh man, that never works on me.
Is this like first Wes Anderson?
This is not a Wes Anderson at all. It's Joe Johnston, actually.
Really?
Yeah. It's the guy who made Jurassic Park 3.
Man. Oh, good.
Yeah. He's pretty good, though. He made October Sky. It's a really good movie. No, yeah, it's just a like what you'd imagine, like a Robert Zemeckis. Like, it would be a good, like, oh, I know that guy's work, and it's very similar, very heartfelt, kind of transparent Americana.
Mainly heartfelt. That's its main thing. Yeah.
So, Michael, do you also like this movie?
I like October Sky. Yeah, for sure. Just because, I mean, Chris Cooper for a long time was my favorite actor. After Adaptation, I think, really locked it in.
That's such a, what a specific choice. It's a
He's
good
so
choice.
Good,
it's not a bad choice. It's just, I think, I want to poll 100 Americans right now and ask them who their favorite actor is, and I don't think one of them is going to say Chris Cooper. It's it's not a bad answer, but it's no one's answer.
No, that's true. And my pick, to answer your question, also features Chris Cooper, so I was glad Abe and I have some kind of overlap. I think it's for different reasons. And I'm sorry to tease it, but I want to reveal it last just because there's a few things I want to say about it before everyone's minds are tainted, which is that...
This is really exciting.
I hope it's Silver City. I hope so much.
I feel very deeply. I'm an emotional guy, both the highs and the lows. I do believe in, like, when you're in that state of being fully present, everything in the world that you encounter is like a beautiful miracle, including like a plastic bag floating in the wind. So the reason I'm really embarrassed is, well, pretty obvious. There's the Kevin Spacey connects, but also like it's a focal point for something that I do see is true and had to be woken up to. They're like Sopranos and Phantom Thread. Like, boy, we sure do write a lot about how the white straight guy might be mean, but he's sad inside. So you can forgive him. You could see how he's human, right? And it's like almost the victor class, like, you know, rehabilitating or like mostly writing fiction from their own point of view. And that's not ideal. And I think a lot of people feel that way about American Beauty now. Like, oh, you fucked your son's girlfriend. I get said in that context a lot. And yet the kid, the weird kid with the camera who talks about how sometimes like I feel like I'm going to dissolve because the world is so beautiful. I feel like that a lot. I think of that kid.
Is that a movie that you would... So I watched it when it came out, certainly, and haven't revisited it. Is it a movie that you would like tell people in your life, oh, you should see this movie? Do you think... I have very little memory of it at this point.
Yeah.
Other than being attracted to Mina Suvari. In ways that like feel complicated now because she's a child in that movie.
So smooth.
Jesus Christ.
I'm just thinking of the cover with the rose petals and the... It's like a very soft situation.
Yeah, but you didn't say soft. You said smooth, and that's different.
That's true. Choose my words very carefully.
But like, should I rewatch that movie? Or is that one where you'd be like, no, you it's fine. You'll think less of me if you watch it now.
So I definitely, because I love film and craft, can watch stuff and appreciate just the craft, like October Sky, for the acting and the shots and the beauty of like the set deck and stuff. I would say it's along those lines. Like, Alan Ball wrote it, and Alan Ball is very good. He did Six Feet Under, and then the one I don't approve of as much with the True Blood.
Yeah, he did the vampires. Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of trashy,
that's no good.
But I still think it holds up in terms of being a good script. It's just has that Sorkin stink where as we progress great, you know, awesomely as like a society and species, it has that stink of like, right, cis hetero white guy writing about how his life feels hollow, but he rediscovers the spark by basically doing whatever he wants and fucking everyone over. And but then tragedy befalls him and isn't that sad. It's like a lot of people don't have patience for that now. And that's why it answers this question for me is I'd go, yeah, fair enough. There's no like reason to watch it for the message. But it's good. The craftsmanship is certainly good.
I might like it on rewatch because one of my least favorite things about me is how much I like Aaron Sorkin. I know it's
right.
I shouldn't.
Yeah.
I even like The Newsroom.
His tricks, I'll say shamefully, that's a good answer too. Aaron Sorkin's tricks work on me.
Yeah.
I hate it to admit it. I really agree with everyone. I'm like, yeah, what a hack. And then we watched The Trial of the Chicago 7, and I was like, that movie was so good. Who wrote that? And it goes, Aaron Sorkin. I was like, fuck, he got
damn
me.
It.
Fuck.
Got me again. Yeah, I almost answered this question with The American President.
Great movie.
Great movie.
Nothing wrong with it.
Almost nothing wrong with
it. I mean, probably stuff wrong with it.
You can like find the modern screwball comedy guy in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
What was the other thing? Oh, the other thing that American Beauty made me think of that will always be very funny to me is, Michael, you know my friend Joe. My childhood friend Joe, he's a lawyer now. His senior quote in our yearbook forever is from American Beauty. And there's no coming back from that. Yeah. I think I wouldn't remember me either, hyphen American Beauty. And it's like, oh man, that like most of us our senior quotes aren't great, but like that's real tough.
That's a beautiful
Kevin
time
Spacey.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got him beat. Yeah. I got him beat. Mm. You know what mine was? I quoted from the song by Third Eye Blind.
Oh boy. Is it When I Graduate?
Nope. Motorcycle Drive-By.
What?
I've never felt so alone. I've never felt so alive. That section.
Oh my God.
And the counselor was like, is this guy okay? Do you need to talk to this kid?
No, because everyone was just like, this guy
We're
sucks.
Out of here. He's you know, a state's like, problem now.
Yeah, exactly. I think I just copy pasted some generic stuff.
Sure.
And it seemed like it was about, it did the job, I guess.
Yes. It did the job.
God.
I absolutely have no memory of what mine was. Sorry.
No, that's fine. This is the question about, this is the show about senior quotes, so it's weird that you didn't bring yours. Right. It's okay. Mine, I was so, like, probably before even freshman year, I was determined to have a Ben Folds or Ben Folds 5 quote as my senior quote, and I spent so much time thinking, like, it was more important to me that I said something from Ben Folds than what I actually said.
Right.
And then by the time I was ready to graduate, I picked a lyric from to begin with, a lot of people don't know Ben Folds. And to take it further, almost no one knows the song One Down, which he wrote sometime between Ben Folds 5 and his more successful solo career. And the song the song is about songwriting. It's not about graduating high school in New Jersey or anything meaningful to me.
Or abortion, even.
A line, I know, not even about abortion. It was just a line, one down and 3.6 tomorrow and I'm out of here. And what hooked me was like, tomorrow and I'm out of here. Yeah, like me. I'm leaving high school and going somewhere else. And so that was my senior quote. And then people would be like, what does it mean, one down and 3.6? I was like, oh, I don't know.
I don't know.
I have no idea what he's talking about.
Did you ever
about.
Find out? Does no. it have some, like, does it mean heroin or something like that?
No, I think I looked into it at one point and it might be about like the length of time a song needs to be. Like he's delivering songs to his record label and he is just sort of like going through the motions of like, all right, there's a song. Now they want one that is 3.6 spins long? I don't know.
Spins? Who knows? That's wild.
Yeah. While you were doing that, I cracked open my yearbook. It turns out it's also a Third Eye Blind. You're my priestess, I must confess, little red panties face down on the mattress.
Yep.
Weird.
Yep. Both bangers, man.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're about ready to wrap the show up unless you guys have anything else to say. There's no the show typically ends when one of the hosts gets bored and starts looking at Twitter or some other website.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't need to be a certain length. We have internally decided that sometimes episodes are 38 minutes long and that's fine. So if you guys
I've seen some of those and I'm like, oh, word? Okay.
Yeah. All right.
If there's anything else you guys want to talk about, we can. Otherwise, I'll start the sign off.
Not specifically, always a delight. I'll take back time and walk my dog, my beautiful dog.
I could do
dog.
This all day, but like I have nothing to bring to the table.
I could continue to talk with you.
The one thing I do want us all to take a retrospective right now and realize that we said Eurotrip, October Sky,
and American Beauty.
Watch those
in a row, dude.
You know, if I may play the Soren role here and have a quick question, are we dirtbags?
I think it's possible.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we get all of them.
The other one I was going to bring, which in high school I adapted into a play and performed with friends, was Usual Suspects.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You can't watch that no more for multiple reasons. For
Kevin Spacey is the one I learned.
And isn't that
it's Brian Singer, too.
Yeah, Brian Singer, too, yeah.
Oh, boy.
Hell yeah.
Seedandspark.com/fun/papa-bear. Thank you, Daniel. We really appreciate the amplification.
We really appreciate it, man.
Thank you for coming. The show is Quick Question, but the audience knows that already. We are recorded, edited, and produced by the irreplaceable Gabe Harder. Our theme song is by the incredible Me Rex. Their digital album is available at merex.bandcamp.com. You can find the show on Twitter at @QQ_Soren and Dan. You can email us QQ with Soren and Daniel@gmail.com. I don't want to list any more links or socials because I have reached the point where I'm tired of talking into a microphone. Thanks again to Michael and Abe, who are making their movie Papa Bear, which you should fund. And if you can't fund it right now, then you should see it when it inevitably gets made. And it's going to be great because it's Michael and Abe.
So smooth.
No. All right, smooth. Bye.
I've got a quick question for you. All right, I wanna hear your thoughts. I wanna know what's on your mind. I've got a quick question for you. All right, the answer's not important. I'm just glad that we could talk tonight. So, what's your favorite?
How did you get?
How did I be?
Remember,
was it ever? Friends and comedy writers. If there's an answer, they're gonna find it. I think you'll have a great time here. I think you'll have a great time.